Oh, Danette Welsh.
That's Danette Welsh. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes.
Apparently, I have a call from a co-op about exhibits and stuff, so maybe we should all call
them. Sure.
Later in a break or something?
Yep.
Your Honor.
We're ready to go.
All right.
Good morning. Let the record show that it is shortly after 9 a.m. on May 1st, 2014. We are present in the commission hearing room in the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the public hearing in the matter of the North Dakota Public Service Commission versus Tom's Backhoe Service, Inc. It is case number GS-13-712. My name is Wade Mann, and I am the procedural administrative law judge designated to preside over this matter. At this time, I will have each of the parties note their appearances for the record, beginning with counsel for the commission.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ryan Norell on behalf of PSC advocacy staff. And also on behalf of PSC advocacy staff are Patrick Fawn and Aaron Mormon. And then testifying in support of advocacy staff's case will be Mike Shep on behalf of MDU and Don Ronis on behalf of MDU.
Mike Shep, and who is the other?
Don Ronis, DawnRoness, also with MDU.
Okay. And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, will you be participating?
Your Honor, I may have some questions, yes, and I would, on behalf of the commission.
Sure.
But I would also like to say that staff person Julie Prescott would be the commission advisor, the additional commission advisor in this case. And she's not present at the hearing, but I will be perhaps calling on her for assistance.
Okay. And would the representative of Tom's Backhoe Service, Inc. state your appearance for the record?
My name?
Yes, your name.
Thomas Thompson.
Okay. And what is your role with the company?
I own Tom's Backhoe.
Okay. Also present today live are Commissioners Kalk and Chrisman, and appearing telephonically will be Commissioner Fedorchek. Commissioner Kalk, at this time, would the commissioners like to make any preliminary statements?
I think just a brief one from each of us, probably. Just thank everyone for being here today, the advocacy staff. Thanks for putting the case together. Tom, thank you for driving over. This is quite honestly, the first time the commission has ever had a hearing on a potential violation on call before you dig. So the process today is similar to what we always do in our hearings, where the advocacy staff will say their piece, and you'll get a chance to say your piece, and then the commissioners will intervene with questions as we may have it. We won't be making any decisions today, but based on today, we'll have a work session, and then we'll decide what we're going to do. So just appreciate everyone coming out here today, and I don't be intimidated by the formality of all this. The big thing the commissioners like to do is just get to the bottom of both sides, or if at least two sides, sometimes there's more, and render what we think is a fair and appropriate decision. So thank you all for being here.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Your Honor, I also want to thank everybody for being here. And Tom, I know that time is money, so I think we just want to keep things moving along. But, Your Honor, are you going to explain the difference between advocacy staff and our own staff? I'm not sure if that's...
I can do that, yes.
People who don't work up here every day.
Yes. And Commissioner Fedorchek, do you have any preliminary comments?
Good morning, everybody. I appreciate the opportunity to have this hearing. I'm sorry that I can't be there in person, but I urge you all to speak as close to the mic as possible, especially you, Ryan. I had a hard time hearing you. Otherwise, I look forward to hearing the facts on the case and coming to a decision.
Thank you, Commissioners. This hearing is the result of a complaint brought by the North Dakota Public Service Commission against Tom's Backhoe Service, Inc., alleging that the company violated North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23-05 and seeking to impose a civil penalty in the amount of $500 for the alleged violation. Before we get into the evidentiary portion of the hearing, we'll briefly address the procedure that will be followed for the matter today. The commission, as the party bringing the complaint, will present its case first, calling any witnesses and presenting any documentary evidence. Mr. Thompson, you will have the ability to cross-examine the commission's witnesses and the commissioners themselves, and the commission's advisory council and staff will also have the opportunity to ask questions of the witnesses. Commissioner Chrisman asked that we kind of explain the difference between advocacy staff and advisory staff. Advocacy staff in this case, represented by Mr. Norrell, is essentially the party who is bringing the complaint on behalf of the commission. They're essentially the complainant in this matter. You're the respondent. The advisory council and advisory staff are the legal representative and the staff that advises the commission. The commission in this case, the commissioners make the final determination on determining whether or not there has been a violation and whether or not to impose a civil penalty. I'm simply a procedural hearing officer. I call the witnesses, administer the oaths, and make any evidentiary rulings and so forth. But that's the difference in the roles between advocacy staff and advisory staff. Do you understand?
Your Honor,
yes, I do.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, go ahead.
One thing, the evidence that the commission can use to make a decision is what is gleaned at the record, on the record. Okay, it's not any additional evidence that advisory staff can give them back in their offices or anything like that. It's today what's made on the record.
Yes,
that's correct. And then, Mr. Thompson, once the advocacy staff presents its case, then you will have the opportunity to present your case in essentially the same manner. You have the ability to testify, and then Mr. Norrell can cross-examine you, and the commissioners and advisory staff and counsel can also ask questions of you. So the North Dakota Rules of Evidence will apply. Documentary evidence must be introduced and marked as an exhibit and admitted into the record. And again, I will serve only as the procedural administrative law judge in this matter. The commission will make the determination as to whether or not a violation has occurred and whether or not to impose a civil penalty, if so. No decision will be reached on the matter today. The proceedings are being recorded and will be available for later review. Any party aggrieved by the final decision of the commission has the right to request a hearing, a rehearing, or to appeal the decision to district court in accordance with North Dakota Century Code Chapter 2832. Any of the parties have any questions with respect to the procedures to follow today?
Well, Your Honor.
Mr. Thompson? Okay. Any other preliminary matters that either party would like to discuss before we move forward?
Nope.
Okay. Would either party like to make a brief opening statement?
Advocacy staff would. Not, Your Honor.
You want to make an opening statement? Okay. Mr. Norrell, you can proceed with the commission's case.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to begin by calling Mr. Patrick Fawn to the stand.
Good Morning, Mr. Fahn. I'm required to advise you that the maximum penalty for perjury in this state is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, a maximum of 5 years imprisonment, or both. Mr. Fahn, being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
You can proceed, Mr. Norell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Fahn. Could you state for the record what your position is with the Public Service Commission?
I'm the director of the Compliance and Competitive Markets Division.
And how long have you been in that position?
Since July of 2008.
And what are your duties relative to that position?
The Compliance and Competitive Markets Division implements the pipeline safety program, the damage prevention program, weights and measures program, and also administers the siting laws, the state of North Dakota siting laws, and we participate in other hearings as needed for the commission.
How is your position involved with the damage prevention cases?
The in my position, I oversee the work that is done by the staff and in investigations, and I oversee the administration of the cases.
How many damage prevention cases would you say you've worked on?
I have been involved and worked on 54 damage prevention cases.
Did you draft and file the formal complaint in this matter?
Staff, Aaron Mormon, staff, drafted the complaint, and I signed the complaint and filed it.
Your Honor, I'm going to hand out what the PSC would propose as Exhibit 1, which is the complaint, and I'll hand it out for everyone's review.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you repeat what Ryan is handing out?
Commissioner, this is Ryan. I just handed out the formal complaint in the matter.
Okay, I have a copy in my file. Thank you.
Okay. That is dated March 6, 2004 and signed by Patrick Fahn. And that would be you. Is that correct, Mr. Fahn?
Correct.
Your Honor, I would move admission of PSC Exhibit 1 into evidence.
Mr. Thompson, do you have any objection?
No. Yeah.
PSC Exhibit Number 1 is admitted.
Thank you.
Oh. Your Honor, how many pages is it? I want to be sure I have the full. Does it have an attachment?
Your Honor, this one does have an attachment. It's a 3-page attachment, which includes the third-party damage complaint.
Okay. Thank you.
You can proceed, Mr. Norell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Fahn, is there any edits that you would like to make to the complaint?
Yes, in paragraph, it'll be part one of the complaint, I guess, paragraph one, or Roman numeral one. The address should say 323 Woodland Hills Lane in Brainerd. And in part six, well, I don't know if I should address that one or...
No, that's fine.
It is fine? Okay. There's potentially here there's the address may be 3520 Southwest 4th Street in the city of Minot. The actual excavation was being, I guess, performed at a road, on a road location, and so the exact residence address may not be correct. It may be 35, or excuse me, is it 3502 or 3520?
3520.
3520 instead of 3500.
We can have MDU testify to that as well.
Right.
Mr. Fahn, would you describe the process the PSC uses under your direction to prosecute damage prevention cases?
Well, the process typically begins with a third-party damage complaint filed by, a third-party, which in that complaint form is now called the North Dakota One Call complaint form. Once we receive the complaint form, we send a letter with a copy of the complaint to the excavator. In this situation, it was the excavator. And we request a response to that letter. And also staff begins to investigate the evidence of a locate ticket and locations identified on the locate tickets with the North Dakota One Call system. And once we receive the response from the excavator in this case, staff reviews both the complaint that was filed by the complainant and the response and makes a determination on whether there is a violation of the North Dakota One Call law. Once a determination is made, if there is a violation, that we suspect there's a violation, we will visit with the, in this case, Tom's Backhoe, the excavator, and discuss what we have determined. And we will then also discuss the option. We have a couple of options for resolving if there is a violation. If there's an alleged violation, one of the options is a consent order in which the operator or the excavator agrees that there was a violation. And we have a form, a document that we prepare that the excavator can sign off on. And we can bring that to the commission to resolve the issue. If there may be a penalty, a civil penalty included in the compliance order. But then we bring it to the commission. The commission decides on whether they will accept that consent order at a meeting. The other option for the excavator is to have a hearing, which is the option that was chosen by Mr. Thompson in this case. And then we come before the commission and have the hearing.
In this matter.
And then it continues. The regular commission procedure after that would be the commission would have a work session, direct staff to prepare an order and then act on an order at some future commission meeting.
How was this matter initiated?
This matter was initiated with a third-party complaint form filed by Montana Dakota Utilities.
And who filed that on behalf of MDU?
Mike Shep.
Part 5 of the formal complaint, Exhibit 1, states that it implies that there was a staff investigation. Who did you conduct that investigation yourself?
That investigation was conducted by Mr. Aaron Mormon.
Did you have any oversight or direction or supervision over that investigation?
Yes, I'm available to answer questions that he may have during the investigation and make suggestions.
And then do you provide supervision or direction to Mr. Mormon in your role as Director of Compliance and Competitive Markets?
Yes.
Based on Mr. Mormon's investigation, which he will testify to later, so he can get into the nitty-gritties of it, but just from a 5,000-foot view here, based on your review of the investigation, do you believe Tom's Backhoe was in violation of the one-call law?
Yes.
And why would you believe that?
Well, in this situation, I believe everybody's in agreement that the line was located properly and marked, and the line was subsequently hit by the excavator for whatever reason, but it was hit by the excavator, and therefore proper care or due care was not exercised.
Thank you. I have no further questions for Mr. Fawn.
Mr. Thompson, any questions for Mr. Fawn?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Fawn, for your testimony. Just a couple quick questions. What is the range of fines that you can recommend to the commission if you choose to?
In this particular case, the range of fines can be from $0 to $5,000. This particular event was before the new law. That was became effective August 1st of 2013.
Okay, and then just has the commission, in your recollection, ever had cases where there's been a line that's been properly located, but the depth of line was, how do I explain this, where the company made the assumption the depth of line was, once they were below a certain level, they didn't have to worry about it, and we found that the depth is not one of those things that you can just say, we know it's a certain depth. The company has to make sure they always do the care required no matter what the depth is?
I can think of at least one case where we've had that situation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fawn.
Commissioner Chrisman?
I can't remember the term you use, undue care or lack of care required or whatever term you used there. But so if something is called in for location and it's marked and subsequently damaged, do you feel that automatically means that there wasn't proper care given? Or would there be a way that something could be damaged even when you're trying reasonably hard and making, you know, all the reasonable efforts to be cautious of that?
I mean, that's why we have, you know, that's why we're having this hearing, I believe. But initially, I think that, you know, you have to expose and locate that line once it's properly marked. And if you do that carefully, you won't be damaging the facility.
Was this a sited facility, or was this something that didn't require siting by the commission?
This was not sited by the commission.
So in the cases of sited facilities, we have that record, and in the record of all those that I can recall, at least, there's discussion in there of what depth they're going to be putting in a pipeline. In the cases of facilities that go in without siting, is there any kind of a legal standard, or is there anything that's ultimately just turned into the commission or to one call that says about how deep that is buried?
I think there are two answers to the question. The depth of the pipeline is not located when, you know, and one call does not know the depth of the pipeline. But saying that, under our pipeline safety regulations, because this is a gas line, there are minimum depth requirements for this type of line that are specified.
And what are the minimums?
This one, I believe, was a service line on a roadway. And the minimum depth requirement here is 18 inches.
That's by rule or a law or what?
Those are the DOT requirements under 49 CFR Part 192. I can't remember what. I can look at the section up.
That's fine, though. It's not our rule.
We have adopted those rules.
And I might have one more later, but
okay. Commissioner Fedorchuk, do you have any questions for Mr. Fawn?
I do. Patrick, could you tell me the difference between what your understanding of what Tom Stacko did? It looks in the complaint that they pulled the line and discovered the depth and then just that it was throughout. So how they proceeded and what they should have done to do it appropriately and provide the right amount of care where they wouldn't be fined right now, subject to fine.
I'll give you a quick answer, and then please let me know if I've adequately answered your question. But in each situation where you are crossing the facility, you need to make sure you know where that facility is when you get within 2 feet of the line marker, which is the closest that line needs to be marked by the locator. It needs to be within 2 feet either side of the pipe. So when you get into that area, within that 2 feet, you need to carefully determine the location of the line because you don't know what the depth of that facility is. In this situation, I believe that my understanding is that one It's called potholing, where you dig around that area to locate the facility. And it was done in one location, but I believe the line was crossed approximately 11 times. And so from what I know, it was not potholed in any of the other 10 locations.
Okay. So how should they done it at each location?
At each location, they should definitely definitely locate the facility by, potholing is one acceptable method.
Potholing is an acceptable method. Can you tell me what's the difference between potholing and then just digging down and exposing the line? Those sound like two separate techniques.
No, those are essentially the same thing. Digging with a, not with a backhoe, for example, but with a shovel to locate the facility, carefully locate the facility without damaging it.
Okay, so they did that once in the 1,500 feet area and assumed that the line was the same depth and crossed it 11 times and struck it once. They should have done it each time they struck across the line.
They should have carefully located the facility each time they crossed it. Now, as the details, I guess I would defer the questions on the number of times they crossed the line and the number of times they potholed. I would defer that to one of the other witnesses
sure.
that did the investigation.
Okay, yeah. But that's your understanding.
Yes.
And do excavators understand and know that this is how they're supposed to do it? Where do they learn that this is what's expected of them?
I certainly hope so.
It's spelled out in law or in rules that how this is supposed to be done, or is this how do they know that this is the acceptable procedure?
Well, it's under the North Dakota One Call law.
Okay.
You know, they need to follow that law, and in that law, it specifies how the facilities are to be marked, and it specifies that the excavator is to. Dig in a careful and prudent manner and locate the facility and not damage the facility.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
Is Jeff Kotsako, any questions from advisory staff?
I do have a couple of questions. I think Commissioner Chrisman was getting to this, but I was just going to try to ask it point blank. Is it your position that there is a sort of a strict liability standard? If there's damage, there's a lack of care? Lack of adequate care?
It certainly raises that flag.
And what standard are you using? If the flag goes up, what standard do you personally as the director go to make a judgment call about lack of care?
Well, in this case, for example, my understanding is that the line was not potholed each time it was crossed.
Okay, your testimony talked about lack of due care, but the complaint talks about not operating in a careful and prudent manner. Are they the same to you?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a definition of due care or careful and prudent in the statute?
Yes.
Do you know which? Careful and prudent?
Careful and prudent, I believe. Let me check.
And what is that definition if you have it?
I do have it. I have it here. It's a North Dakota Century Code. Section 49-23-01, paragraph 3, or definition 3. And careful and prudent manner means excavating within 24 inches, and then it gives the centimeter equivalent, of the outer edges of an underground facility located manually and marked by the owner or operator by stakes, paint, or other customary manner, and supporting and protecting the uncovered facility.
Okay. Forgive me, but that's not the easiest definition for me to understand. What's your understanding of those words? What should an excavator do to be careful and prudent?
Well, to me, let's see, you have to combine it with other sections of the statute.
you could walk us through, I'd appreciate it.
You have there's another section of the statute that states, it's a section 49-23-04, paragraph 3B, which states that for purposes of this section, the approximate horizontal location of the underground facility is a strip of land 2 feet, and then it gives a centimeter equivalent, on either side of the underground facilities. This subdivision does not apply to an underground facility to convey water. And then there's another section, 49-23-05, paragraph 1, which states that to avoid damage and to minimize interference with underground facilities in and near the construction area, an excavator shall maintain a clearance between an underground facility and the cutting edge or point of any mechanized equipment, considering the known limit of control of cutting edge or point to avoid damage to the facility. Now, those all taken together to me mean that when you're within 24 inches of the mark, the line mark that's marked by the operator, you need to exercise careful and prudent excavation within that zone, and you also need to maintain clearance between the underground facility and the cutting edge of your mechanized equipment, considering the known limit of control of your excavation equipment, and avoid damage to the facility.
Okay, I think you might have gone a little far. I appreciate you tying those statutes together for your perspective on this. But when we get back to careful and prudent, which is also one of the items listed in 49-23-05, so the one you referenced is in addition to the one that says be careful and prudent. To me, that means there's something more to being careful and prudent than just how that ties in. So when you take just the words careful and prudent, you go back up to the definition and not the other additional things an excavator needs to do, but just the things to be careful and prudent as defined here, what would that be in your mind? What would an excavator be doing under that definition?
Well, it does not specify.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have.
Commissioner Christman, you indicated you may have some additional questions.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Is this a plastic line?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
And when these distribution gas lines go in, if there's a road or a dike or something like that where there's a significant elevation rise but short, do they bore that in, or does the pipeline follow the contour of the ground, or what? If I guess the point of the question is, can there be instances where a line like this is 2 feet deep and then a little ways later it's 20 feet deep because the elevation rose significantly and then come back down to a 2 foot depth again?
You know, I don't know if there's any line that's ever 20 feet deep, but there certainly are reasons for the depth varying from one location, one spot to another.
And quickly. Like in the
Possibly.
Case of a berm for flood control or something like that, that line would probably go straight, not follow the
Sandy,
contour.
Could you talk closer to the mic, please?
Okay. I just asked if in the case of a dike or something, if the line would be expected to be horizontal under there, or make a big bend and follow the contour of the ground.
There can be reasons for the depth of the pipe to vary from one spot to another, and I'm sure that MDU, who will be testifying later, can give you many examples of that.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Kalk, did you have additional questions as well?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I do have one other question. Patrick, are there any instances where a contractor would not be responsible for damage that was that occurred for striking a line such as this, that they were responsible for locating? I mean, they say they used reasonable care. It sounds to me, by what you read in the Century Code, that basically they have to do everything to prevent damage. If they damage it, it's kind of their fault. Is that the correct interpretation of what you just provided it, or are there circumstances where it wouldn't be their fault?
Well, there are circumstances where it wouldn't be their fault. If the line is not located properly and not within that 2 feet of where the facility is located, and the excavator strikes that line, the excavator, actually we may have a complaint from the excavator in that situation, that the utility did not locate it properly.
Any other circumstances other than the mark was inaccurate?
No mark at all. If the operator was not aware that their facility was in that area, we've had a situation like that.
But if there's an appropriate mark and the facility is within 2 feet of that mark, then it's the contractor excavator's responsibility to find it and avoid it.
I agree. I agree. Oh, yes. The answer is yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Norell, any redirect?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Fahn, you may be excused.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, yes.
Mr. Thompson, any recross? I guess there was no redirect, but if you have any additional questions, Mr. Thompson.
I have a question about what do you think the chances of if somebody didn't pothole, I don't know where anybody come up with this 10 times, the chances you could dig by a utility without hitting it when it's buried under the ground, at least two or three of them 10 times if you didn't pothole it.
Okay, I'm going to see if I understand the question. If you don't pothole and locate the facility, what are the chances that you would damage it?
Yeah.
I think there's a pretty good chance that you would damage it.
All right.
And hit it.
I don't know where you got your information for the, because we pothole all the time, but when you said that, I didn't pothole.
Okay, I think there will be a witness to follow that will discuss, we'll summarize the letter that you sent in response, and also MDU will be testifying.
Okay. What is the definition of a main line and a service line? When some service lines or some main lines are 1 inch, and now this is a 1 inch line that goes into one of the hotels there, is that still a main line or is that a service line?
Is the hotel, does it have separate lines to individual rooms or does it have just one line going to the hotel? Probably one line going to the hotel. That is a service line. It serves one customer. And a main line usually serves more than one customer.
I'm not sure, but I think it serves two hotels. But I'm not sure. It maybe only does one.
Well, the one call law does not
make the
distinction. It just says it's a facility that is covered by the one call law.
What is the depth of a main line?
I think it's 24 inches.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Advisory staff, any follow-up?
I have one. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Fawn.
Oh, excuse me. I need to clarify my last answer.
Go ahead.
It's a minimum of 24 inches. Sorry.
Are you aware of any decisions in other jurisdictions that defining? I'm going to use due care because we've got this definition in the statute for reasonable or careful and prudent or whatever the magic words are. I'll use due care or reasonable care as the generic legal question on cases like this. Are you aware of any decisions where that's been interpreted, defined in other jurisdictions? I'm assuming there are none in our jurisdiction.
I am not aware of any other jurisdiction that uses the term careful and prudent or of any decisions that have been made.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioners, any follow-up questions?
I do now.
Go ahead, Commissioner Crisman.
Now I just need to make sure I understand this right. Earlier we discussed a DOT minimum depth requirement of 18 inches. That's for a service line?
Or a service line that crosses a roadway.
And there's a minimum for a main line of 24 inches?
Yes.
And the distinction is a main line provides gas to two or more customers and a service line is going to one customer?
Typically, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any more questions.
Okay. Mr. Nurel?
Mr. Fawn, are you aware if the one-call law is different for an excavator who hits a main line versus a service line?
It is not.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Thompson, are you through with the witness? Okay. Advisory staff? Okay. Mr. Fawn, you may be excused. Mr. Norell, you can call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to call Mike Shep, Regional Gas Superintendent for Montana Dakota Utilities.
Mr. Shep, you were in the room and heard when I advised Mr. Fawn of the penalty for perjury. Do you understand the penalty for perjury?
I do.
And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Norell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Shep. Am I pronouncing your name
correctly? Yes.
Okay. Correct. Thank you. Could you describe for the record what your position is with MDU?
I'm the Region Gas Superintendent for Montana Dakota Utilities and Great Plains Natural Gas.
And how long have you been in that position?
Approximately 4 years.
And what are your duties and responsibilities as it pertains to that?
I oversee the engineering and construction of the gas system for the region, which includes basically for North Dakota, it's central and eastern North Dakota, for Montana, Dakota, and Great Plains.
And would Minot be in that, that district then?
Yes.
Region, I apologize. How is your position involved with one-call violations?
I oversee all the complaints or items involved with one-call for the region.
And would those be complaints from customers, from excavators? Where those complaints originate?
Customers, excavators, locators. I also serve on the North Dakota One-Call Board for representing gas and pipeline companies. So,
okay. How many violations or cases of one call have you worked on with MDU?
Cases with MDU would be 8 in 2013.
Would you describe for the record how Montana Dakota Utilities typically handles violations of the one call law when their lines have been hit?
Typically, how we've internally handled it, we would send a letter for the first violation to a contractor, kind of give them the one chance, kind of warning, explain the one call. If they need more information, to contact the one call human program manager. And then on the second violation, we typically submit a complaint to the PSC.
And would that be a third-party complaint like Mr. Fawn described earlier?
Correct.
Your Honor and Commissioner Fedorchak, I'm going to pass out the third-party complaint right now so everyone has that in front of them. Mr. Shep, did you draft and file this third-party complaint with the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
Your Honor, I would move admission of the third-party complaint into evidence as PSC Exhibit 2.
Mr. Thompson, any objection?
No.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
PSC Exhibit Number 2 is admitted into evidence. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Fahn had mentioned the excavation address. Is there and that's in Part C of the third-party damage complaint. Do you have any information as regards to the location of the damage?
Yes, the correct address for the damage was 3520 Southwest 4th Street. On their report, it's 3500. And that was basically called 3500 came from the excavator when they damaged it. So that would the correct one is 3520.
Could you describe how you gathered the information submitted on this complaint?
I gathered the information from Don Ronis in our Minot office. They submit basically via email or whatever, send me some information on it, tell me all the details so I can fill out the third-party complaint for the company.
Do you supervise Ms. Ronis' duties as regards to damage prevention or one-call matters?
Yes, indirectly. I do the whole region. Any employee in the region I'd be overseeing their duties on the one-call items.
Based on her investigation and your experience, do you believe that there was a violation of North Dakota one-call law by Tom's Backhoe in this matter?
Yes.
And what's your basis for that?
Basically, our facility was damaged with the mechanical equipment within the tolerance zone.
Could the witness repeat that answer? I couldn't quite hear it.
The facility was damaged in the tolerance zone with mechanical equipment.
Thank you.
Commissioner Christman had asked earlier about the differences in variation and depth. Would you be able to testify to that matter?
Yes. We install our mains and services based per the code, but landscaping, road grade changes, there's lots of examples. Our facilities are installed 20 years ago in some areas, and it could be 2 feet deep at the time, and they go and change the grade or cut the road down, and we could be 6 feet at the end. Or, you know, we don't move our facilities unless we're in conflict with a road project or that. It could be the same thing in somebody's backyard, they landscape or grade or things like that.
Thank you. No further questions for this witness, Your Honor.
Mr. Thompson, any questions?
Yes. Your facility was approximately 2 years old, this service line. So it should have maintained at the same depth because the road hadn't changed. This was the first road job in them 2 years in that same site. So your facility should have been at least 18 inches deep or more across the road. Were you aware that this facility had been cut twice in the previous year by two other excavators?
I was not aware. Somebody in the local office may know that. I don't know all that exactly.
So
as far as the grade, I mean, we do it per that. I mean, we can put it in at 24 inches and the road before the road goes down, and that can change by the time they pave it. They change the grade, the engineers change the grade, change the ditch cuts. We don't have control after we've done it.
Yeah, I have no further questions.
Okay.
He wasn't there, so.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
You had said that you believe there was a violation because facilities were damaged within the tolerance zone with mechanical equipment, I think is pretty close to what you said. Could you flesh that out a little bit more for me? What do you mean?
Basically what Pat said also, there's 24 inches on either side of the mark. You have to hand dig within that area to find the facility and work around the facility. If the facility's damaged, with the mechanical equipment, that's a violation of one call law. You have to hand dig and expose the facility.
And you're then you're explaining, I think, how the word manually gets in that definition.
Yes, correct.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So it's pretty much if the, you know, you could say if there's mechanical equipment within that zone that damages something, that is a strict violation. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike, for your testimony. The just a couple follow-ups to your testimony. The you explained that MDU's protocol is that by the time if the commission ever receives a third-party complaint, that means you've already had one complaint with the excavator. That's what I understood. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So this would be the second time that Tom's backhoe has hit MDU facilities in the mined area?
We had four last year.
From Tom's backhoe?
Correct.
Do you have a audit trail that you could provide as a late-filed exhibit to this commission that shows the correspondence that you sent to Tom in the previous Tom's backhoe in the previous four times?
I don't know. We have the billing information and the documents for that. Don would have that.
I could end hold that question then, because the in my opinion, I'll talk with our counsel. It'll be interesting to see how that may play out in this future discussion of what can be in the record. But I'll talk to counsel on a break, but that'll be a question that I'll be asking Mr. Thompson when your turn comes about that. And then the last thing is the same thing that our general counsel was talking about with, I think I talked in my opening remarks about being over in the dig-in dinner last night with excavators as well as people that own facilities last night in Fargo, and they were joking about the spoon zone. And it was interesting that they talked about the same thing, that if you're inside that in that 2-foot radius and you still don't have not located the facility, you better get down there with the spoon, make sure you're not going to hit something. You shouldn't be in there with the mechanical equipment. And so I think what I heard you say, that had Tom's backhoe been in there with a shovel or something and damaged the line, you'd have looked at it differently than having mechanical equipment just digging through there. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's correct. Typically, if somebody's hand digging and damages, you'll just nick the line, or you could poke a hole into the plastic line. Most of those, the excavator's doing due diligence in our feeling, so we typically wouldn't. That'd be an example we probably wouldn't bill for that.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Commissioner Christman?
What was the depth of this line where it was damaged?
I don't know exactly. I wasn't on site at that time, so I couldn't answer that. Dawn could answer that question.
And she'll be testifying?
Yeah, correct. Okay.
And is this a main line or a distribution line?
It was a service line, a 1-inch service line feeding a customer.
Feeding only one single customer?
Per 192 code, a definition of a service line is you can have one service line feeding two customers. Anything more than two customers is considered main. Service line would be two customers or less. Three customers or more would be a main.
And this one feeds two?
I'm not sure on that. Don would be able to answer that.
Mr. Thompson brought up that this was hit a couple times last year. Did you say that would be something that Don or someone else here will be able to address? Okay. I have nothing else. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak, any questions?
I don't have any more questions for Mike. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Norell, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Thompson?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, one last shot. Okay, Mr. Shep, you may be excused, and Mr. Norell, you can call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call Don Ronis to the stand.
Ms. Ronis, you were in the room as well when I advised of the penalty for perjury. Do you understand the penalty for perjury?
I do.
And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, Mr. Norell, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Ms. Ronis. Could you please describe for the record what your position is with MDU?
I am the field operations supervisor in the Minot District.
And how long have you been in that position?
Approximately 3.5 years.
Could you describe your duties and responsibilities?
I am responsible for placing safety as our number one priority in our day-to-day work functions. We work towards providing a safe, reliable service to our customers that conforms to the code, and hopefully we exceed our customers' expectations in our operations, construction, and maintenance of our gas distribution system, as well as our service and repair for our Minot District. I supervise and support the staff that performs the tasks.
How is your position involved with one-call violations?
On all of our hit lines, I oversee and supervise the first responders, as well as getting ELM, who is our one-call locator, to respond, to verify their locates, and to provide a report to me.
How many violations or cases of one-call have you worked on?
Well, unfortunately, in the Minot District, we've had multiple and many hit lines in 2013, which was better than 2012. However, I believe that in the Minot District, we had a total of 4 violations, which all have been resolved with the exception of this one.
Could you describe from your position how MDU would handle a violation? How would you respond to a violation such as this one if a line's been hit within your field?
Well, as Mike stated, I provide the reports. I collect the feedback from our first responders and our repair people, as well as ELM's reports, and I kind of provide input and feedback back to Mike Shep. And then from there, if it's been multiple, if the contractor has had multiple hits, then he takes it from there for us.
How did you come to be aware of the violation in this matter?
Well, as I stated, our service techs are our first responders. As soon as our dispatch gets those responding, they call us, and then in turn I get ELM to respond to verify their locates and provide a report to me. That's how I became aware, and then, of course, our first responders also report back to me.
Did you actually respond to the scene of the violation in this matter?
On this one, yes, I did.
Could you describe for the commissioners what you saw, the conversations, just in general, what took place once you got to the scene?
Once I arrived, our first responder actually had already had the service line squeezed off with our squeeze-off tool, and he was in the process of doing the repairs. Tom's backhoe had actually taped our line shut to eliminate the leak, and so our service tech was in the process, and then Tom had and I'm sorry, I don't do this all the time, so I am a little nervous, pardon me, but anyway, Tom had made the comment that every time that we have to respond, that's downtime for him, which I understand. But like I said, safety is of our most importance, and downtime for him is also downtime for us, because we are pulling techs from other areas and other jobs and commitments that we have also. And so we also had noted that on one spot where he had went under one of our lines, that there wasn't sufficient clearance or padding between. And so I had asked him that if we could inspect that before he backfills, and to verify that would be done. And he stated that he would be working through the weekend to take care of that. And so at that time, I gave him my card and asked him to call me, and I actually went out on a Saturday to make sure that we were good with that, and he did do that. So I appreciated that.
I'm going to Commissioner Fedorchuk and ALJ Mann, I'm going to hand out a picture here just so that way everyone has a visual of what we're talking about.
Okay.
Is that an exhibit, Ryan? Thank you.
Ms. Ronis, do you have the picture that we've marked as PSC, proposed PSC Exhibit 3 in front of you?
I do.
Does this accurately depict the gas line as you saw it on the day of the violation?
Yes.
Your Honor, I would move admission of this picture into evidence as PSC Exhibit 3.
Mr. Thompson, do you have any objection?
No objection.
Ms. Jeff Kotsako, any objection?
I don't have any objection, but I think we should know who took the picture.
It's fine.
ELM, our locator, did.
And I was going to ask you when it was my turn, what is ELM, for the record, please?
Do I know their... ELM is a contractor that does our locating for us. I'm sorry, I don't know their full name off the top of my head.
I didn't know what they were. Okay, thank you.
PSC Exhibit Number 3 will be admitted into evidence, and Mr. Norell, you can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Ronis, one thing I would like to draw attention to, the date stamp on the bottom left-hand corner says 7/25/13. The violation is alleged to have happened on 7/26. Do you know why there's a discrepancy there?
All I can say is that their camera date had to be off because this all was on 7/26, and even the report back, my email report back, is dated July 26 at 1:30 p.m.
Who is that report from?
Robbie Volk, who was their ELM representative on the site.
Could you describe for the commission what this picture shows?
The blue tool there is actually our squeeze-off tool that our service tech installed and to stop and eliminate the gas flow. If you look towards the bottom of the picture, you can see the nick in the pipeline, and that is actually where the tape had been put and to eliminate the leak coming out of the pipeline. And that is the section of the pipe that our service tech had repaired.
On the right-hand side of the picture, do you know what caused those the scouring or the digging marks?
That was the mechanical equipment.
Do you know about the approximate distance between where that line is and where that arc would be? Is that within 24 inches, would you say?
Yes.
Can you tell from this picture at all if the line has been properly marked or identified? Are there any paint marks or...
I can see a flag out in the grass, but...
Do you know if this line had been marked?
Yes, it had been. He had called in a locate, and everything had been totally marked.
Do you know the depth of the line at the location it was hit?
Well, looking at our repair report, it says 12 inches. And this is on the service line. This is, Tom's backhoe had been doing lots of work going up and down the 4th Street, and he had multiple lines to cross going up and down that street. This was a brand new construction site that had lots of dirt work going on. It was construction site of a new motel, and... So the motel at this time, no, maybe I shouldn't say that because I'm not sure if it was open yet or not at that time. So,
do you know from this picture where it's taken, where the roadway would be? Just for orientation purposes, sorry,
yeah.
Just a curiosity.
I need to get... I should have went out and revisited this site one more time before coming here. The service line
was it run parallel or perpendicular to the roadway?
You only handed out one picture, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I apologize.
I'm sorry, you don't have this picture, but this, you can see the squeeze-off tool here, and I believe that this would have been the roadway back. No, I think I'm better off not answering that because I don't want to say it wrong. Sorry.
That's fine. Your Honor, I would move that the last few statements regarding the picture that has not been passed out be striking from the record.
Okay, we'll strike those from the record.
Thank you. And I apologize. I don't know that it matters where the roadway is. I think just for orientation it might have helped. But you've stated, Mr. Shep has stated, that it appears that there was a history with Tom's backhoe along this line, along that street. Could you describe that for the commission?
Yes. Tom's backhoe had actually I'm going to go with two prior strikes, one on July 1st, one on July 2nd, and then this line strike was on July 26th. We actually had another incident on July 12th. However, we could not really prove that if it was his excavation or if it was the vintage of our pipeline that caused the leak on that in July 12th. So we did not bill him for that one.
Has Tom's backhoe paid the damages on the other violations?
Yes, they've paid on all three.
Including this one?
Including this one.
So MDU, would it be accurate to say, has given some chances for Mr. Thompson to work with you guys on this matter?
We try. It's a busy place, so.
Based on your investigation, the experience, do you believe that the excavation was conducted in a careful and prudent manner?
Yes.
You do believe the excavation?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. And
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that?
Based on your investigation and your experience, do you believe the excavation was conducted in a prudent manner?
No.
Okay. And could you describe why that would be?
Well, assuming that the depth of if you pothole once or twice or however many times, it doesn't matter how many times, you need to know exactly where all of these lines are that you're crossing. And assuming that the depth is always the same or where it's at, we have no control if people add more landscape or if they take landscape down or whatever. But we do try and we do install to our standards. And it's very important to know where those lines are at. And what I saw, Tom's backhoe dug with his mechanical within our tolerance zone. And hand digging or potholing that one line would have saved that.
Do you believe that Tom's backhoe was in violation of the North Dakota One Call Law on July 26th last year?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Thompson, any cross-examination?
Yes. On the one line, the 4-inch steel line that goes under State Highway 83 that you didn't bill me for,
mm-hmm.
and said, did you get a chance to look at the damage yourself personally?
I was out on site when the crew was pinpointing that leak, yes.
Did you get to look at the damage, though, the cutout piece of pipe that they took out?
I believe I did look at that, yes.
The pipe is approximately 3/8 of an inch thick, the iron on a gas main like that, 1/4 inch to 3/8 of an inch thick. How thick was the weld where it was cracked?
I honestly cannot answer that.
If I could just interject, I just want to clarify, this is not the line that we're talking about right now?
No, it was the July 12th that he's asking me about.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Thompson.
Well, on that one, I'll answer that question later because I was showed the piece of pipe, or right. I could say no. The weld on it was a 1/16 of an inch thick.
Mr. Thompson, right now we're just asking questions. You will have the ability to testify and give that information during your presentation of the case, but you can go ahead and continue asking questions.
On the one gas line that was, I won't say it was hit, was leaking, was the, did you get to look at that? And was it where it was tapped into the main, was it discolored from being too hot?
I did not look at that. The construction supervisor may have looked at that, but I personally did not.
Is this a different violation as well, or a different alleged violation or gas hit than the one? Okay.
Well, when they bring up and say I did these things, and the other violation, were you ever on the site at the time to see if there was any locate marks?
On which violation are you talking about?
It wouldn't have been the one that was cracked. It would have been one that I did hit.
On the 26th or the 1st or the 2nd?
I'm going to say on the 1st. It could have been 1st or 2nd. I'm not sure which one of them. The one was the burnt one, and the other one was the one I hit that didn't have any locates.
I can tell you that I was not on site July 1st or 2nd.
All right. No further questions.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, questions?
Let's just follow up with the most recent line first. I had understood originally that there were 4 previous ones, but there were 3 previous ones and the 4th one you filed a complaint on. Am I clear on that?
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 12, and 26 of July.
1, 2, 12, and 26. The 26 is the one that we filed the complaint on.
On 1, 2, and 12, were there locate marks?
Yes.
On all of them?
Yes.
Okay. I have to go back and I have a couple questions, but it's back at the beginning. On the picture, can you tell us what direction we are facing or taking the photo from, or one or the other, so we can I appreciate the picture, but it's best when we have some specific description of what it is we are looking at exactly geographic wise. I know you didn't take the picture,
right? I didn't. I'm sorry. And I'm trying to remember all of this, but I believe that we would be facing west on this picture. But again, I wish I would have went out and re-looked at this site.
And so where, and I don't know Minot, so where exactly is this 4th Street or whatever that this building, is it?
Yes, as you're coming in from Bismarck into Minot on 83, this is actually a new motel that's right on the west side of 83. 4th Street is right behind that strip of new businesses going in there.
And so is this on the east side or the west side of the
west side of 83? It goes
of the strip of new businesses, though.
On the west side of the new businesses.
Okay. Looking west.
Yes.
Now, at some point in the beginning of your testimony, you talked about the other violations, and you said this was they've all been resolved except this one. What do you mean by resolved?
From my understanding, the question that was asked of me is on how many violations or cases of the one call law have you worked on? And in Minot, we had four other, a total of four that we had submitted into the PSC. And this morning I asked, and they said that all the other ones have been resolved other than this one for violations.
And you asked who? PSC?
Aaron, I think, yes.
Okay, well, I'll ask him. I wanted to know what MDU meant by resolved.
Yes.
I will ask Aaron what he means by
Thank
resolved.
Thank you.
I thought it was an MDU statement. Okay, I think I have one more. Let me look. You were going to give the number of violations. You said that 2013, there was a lot. It was better than 2012. Then you went to the four.
Yeah.
What are we talking about, total violations?
Not violations. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't have even brought it up, but I know we had about 74 hit lines in Minot in 2013. Okay. And of that, we had four that was turned in.
Okay. That's all I have. Thanks.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Don, for your testimony and for coming down today and your work up in Minot. There's a lot going on up there. Just a few background questions, if you don't mind. I'm curious about the response. So the line gets struck for whatever reason, and gas is leaking. The excavator does what they can to kind of stop it. Do you find out first that your line has been hit because how do you find out that your line has been hit? Is somewhere in your system, does your ops center notice a drop in pressure? How did you find out?
Most times the contractor or someone in the area calls it into our call center. And, of course, the order is entered and first responder is dispatched out. Then our dispatch calls one of the supervisors in our office so that we're aware that we have a hit line.
How big of line would have to be hit before you'd notice something in your operations center?
Oh, probably one of our larger lines, main feeds into town or something.
And then when does the sheriff's department and the fire department get notified a line has been hit?
As soon as our dispatch calls us, we call 811 and they respond with us.
And in this particular case, was anyone injured?
No.
Anybody, I guess if nobody's injured, nobody's killed. How do you assess the risk to other areas with the amount of gas that's been lost? Meaning that this is a smaller line, but there's some point where you maybe have to evacuate buildings. You don't know how much gas has been released. There's potential for further damages. How do you assess that?
Our service first responders are OQ qualified and
so that's their call to make that decision.
They will call in us to come and help if it's a large area that is large blowing gas or if we have a migrating underground leak, we'll pinpoint and know to evacuate, and we also, the Minot Fire Department has been great at assisting and keeping areas safe for us in areas that have been larger hit lines or something.
Okay, this was a hearing today on a one-inch line that was hit, and luckily no one was injured, but the backdrop of the whole safety piece said, this could have been a 2-foot line that somebody put a backhoe through.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's the backdrop that I'm looking at all these cases from. It's you look at the facts of this particular case, but the backdrop of where we need to go with some of this stuff and the precedents that each one of these cases sets. You also pointed out that July 1st and 2nd, and I know this case is about the July 26th incident, but did you say that the Tom's backhoe has reimbursed MDU for the costs on July 1st hit and July 2nd hit?
Yes, and also the 26.
Okay, and that's a question I would have then for counsel. Is in the complaint here, it says page 2, MDU alleges that it has not been reimbursed. Is there a change to that from your witness's testimony to what exhibit 1 is? Or do I have one? Let me look here.
I believe Commissioner, that at the time the complaint was filed, we were not aware that the violation on the 26th had been paid as of yet. I think that would account for the discrepancy. So as of now, we do know that Tom's Backhoe has paid MDU for damages sustained.
Do you want to make a change to Exhibit 1?
I think that would probably be appropriate to amend that, and perhaps we could take care of that after the...
Okay, but as far as... just as long as we're all clear that... So, Don, your understanding is Tom's Backhoe has reimbursed MDU for all costs for July 1st, July 2nd, and July 26th as the costs were filed?
Absolutely.
But for July 12th, there's a lot of discussion about that, but I'm not so much worried about that right now. I just wanted to get on the record that you have been reimbursed for those three incidents.
Yes, we have been.
Okay, and then when you assess cost, MDU is a regulated company by this commission, and when there's a line hit or any type of damage, it goes back to ratepayers. Do you feel that the cost in this case of $401 is a true reflection of the actual cost that MDU incurred to go out and fix this thing and get all the people involved?
What was your dollar amount on that?
What I have from what you filed is that your attorney filed, $401.11 is the cost that you asked for reimbursement, and you're saying that Tom has paid you for. My question is more of a leading question to where this is a regulated company, and I don't know that $401 is accurate. I think it's a larger cost because of all the staff time that's required, and I'm just curious to how do you come up with that $401? Is that encompass all your costs to go out and respond to this, or how do you get that dollar amount?
Well, actually, on this one hit line, our first responder was able to make the repair and everything on his own. We did not need to send a separate crew to do the repairs. So once it was squeezed off, he was able to use our Comstab tools and fittings and be able to make that repair himself. So the cost of repairing that service line is not as high as what if you have to pull a construction crew off and send a construction crew over to do that.
So it doesn't include your staff time going out there or anyone else's. It's just the cost of the actual individual doing the repair?
Yes.
Do you feel that's an accurate reflection of the true cost to MDU ratepayers?
Well, I'm not always out there. If they can handle the job on their own, they certainly do that. And to answer your question, I guess we probably should have build in my time that I had was called out there too.
I just bring this up for discussion in a general nature because we're having more of these in the state, and that's just one of the challenges that we're going to work through. Mm-hmm. But as we look at holistic costs of these things going forward, you know, if there's a loss of life, if there's hospital damage, there's a lot of things that are outside our jurisdiction. But in the areas that are regulated utilities, I just urge all of our regulated utilities, when they have something, to put the full cost to ratepayers as it would reflect. So just a thought. Do you have an opinion why Tom's Backhoe would pay for the cost damages on the 1st, 2nd, and the 26th if they felt they weren't responsible?
None.
Because that was my first – it'll be an interesting question for the Tom's Backhoe. But to me, if you pay for your cost, you're saying you're responsible. Otherwise, why would – I mean, that's why I would view that. You view that the same?
Yes.
So the prior – and we'll talk with Tom's Backhoe, we'll have their chance too, but the – I think what I'm hearing MDU say is they try to really work with excavators that the first incident, you work through it, you didn't file a formal complaint. The second incident, you work through it, you didn't file a formal complaint. The third incident, there's some discussion back and forth, but basically there was no complaint filed. And it was this fourth time that – you kind of said this is enough, that you filed the complaint. That's the way I see it. Is that similar to your thought process on this?
I think that's real similar to the email I sent to Mike Shep. I said, you know, we just need to get a handle on this.
And then there's been some discussion about the whole depth, whether it should be 5 inches or 6 inches or 2 feet. My understanding is always once the line is located, it is the contractor's responsibility to make sure they know with absolute certainty where that telephone line or that pipeline is at. And so they shouldn't be doing anything other than, as I talked about before, the spoon zone or the shovel zone. How do you see that?
Exactly that way. If we're in the tolerant zone of our of the 24 inches, we need to be locating and finding those, know where our lines are at, not locating, but exposing them, you know. If it be Tom's backhoe or if it's one of our own crews, we expect the same out of them, to know what's underground before you're digging.
And even if it was, let's say it's a, well, I think that's enough for now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Chrisman?
Just to follow up on the depth issue, did you say that this was 12 inches where the break occurred?
When I look at the repair report, they did state that it was 12 inches.
And there seemed, unless I misunderstood somebody, there seemed to be a difference of opinion between Mr. Shep and Mr. Fawn about the distinction between a service line and a main line, whether a service line is for one customer or two. But how many customers does this line service?
From my understanding, this line served the new motel that was being built.
And that's it? Just
yes.
One? And it's 1 meter there?
Yes. So.
There was some discussion, but it sounded like not clarity on the exact number, but that there were about 11 places in this area where they crossed the line and didn't hit it. Does that seem about right, whether it's, you know, 8 or 13 or somewhere in that area?
I would say that maybe while Tom was working down 4th Street, you maybe had about 11 lines to cross. I mean, I didn't count them up. I don't know. But this particular service line, you would have only crossed once, right? That's what I would have seen.
Okay, and the whole area down 4th Street, are we talking a block or a mile, or what kind of a range is that?
I guess I would say I don't. If you want, it is kind of like one long block or two long blocks, but it's a long 4th Street behind a bunch of businesses, and his project ran across that because that's where he was doing. So I don't know, probably half mile. I don't know how long it was.
Do you know about what the closest one was to this one that was successfully avoided?
No, I don't.
Okay, no other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, do you have any questions for Ms. Ronas?
I believe Commissioner Kalk and Chrisman have covered my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Norell, any follow-up?
Your Honor, I would like to offer two exhibits, and these would be the MDU copies of the 7-1 and 7-2 violations. And before I hand them out, I want to clarify that the advocacy staff does not offer these to impugn any sort of guilt to Mr. Thompson, simply to show that these have been paid. And then also, I want to draw your attention to the last two pages of each of these is the letter which is sent by MDU to the customer. And this kind of goes to Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco's question as far as the how many strikes versus how many have been turned into the PSC, that discrepancy 74 versus 4. And so that way, at least the commission and Mr. Thompson and everyone can see how MDU typically handles these. And I'll hand these out and then I'll let...
What are they again?
These would be the invoices of the damages from 7-1 and 7-2, which have been, there's been numerous questions asked, numerous questions about have they been paid, and then also the resolution issue that Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco has made.
You can go ahead and pass them out. I'll give Mr. Thompson an opportunity to comment.
So take just a minute to mark these exhibits. I apologize.
Your Honor, how many witnesses...
Your Honor, how many witnesses does Mr. Norell have left to call?
He has just one left, I believe.
And is it Mr. Mormon?
Yes. And I guess I had intended to
take a break after Ms. Ronis if we want to continue on with finish her testimony. Or if you prefer to take a break now.
No, absolutely. I just curious about Mr. Mormon. I don't know if it's better to take a break after they finish their case, then we can talk to counsel, or if it's better to take, I'm indifferent, I guess. Alana's saying
I would prefer to finish the advocacy's case or the Brian's case first.
Are you okay with that? Break. Okay, we'll complete advocacy staff's entire case before the break, so we will call Mr. Mormon before we break.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have to go, Alana. I have to go.
Okay. I'll go right now.
Mr. Thompson, do you want an opportunity to look through these at all?
Well, I guess I would have objected to this even being let into evidence because this isn't about this case. This case stands alone, not about previous alleged damages. And I did not even know that these were paid. My office must have paid them, and I didn't know.
Okay. Mr. Norrell?
Your Honor, and I would just state that there's been a lot of questions asked by the commission regarding had these been paid, and again, the internal resolution process from MDU, and that would be the purpose that I offer this for, would be, again, mainly pages, the last two pages, which is the letter from the company to the operator. I was going to ask Ms. Ronis a couple questions about that. But.
Yeah. How are they relevant to whether or not a violation occurred on the 26th?
I think it just leads to the paper trail as to how we got the violation filed on the 26th, if there's an internal process which would serve to weed out complaints to the PSC.
Yeah. I guess I will wait till Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco comes back to see if she'd like to weigh in as well.
Certainly.
And that'll work, Your Honor. It'll give us time to review these, too, so that'll be fine. Just a question for Mr. Norrell. This is exhibits 4 and 5 are for the discussion around July 1st and July 2nd. Do you have something that shows payment on July 26th?
I do not in with me, but I'm sure we could file that as a late filed exhibit. I could ask the witness as well if you prefer.
Well, the witness already testified that it has been paid. I was just curious if you have a paper trail, an audit trail that would show that. Not that I don't believe the witness. It's just nice to have that on this case. And that is relevant, absolutely, to this case. Not that these aren't, but.
Commissioner, this is Alana. Don't forget the complaint is simply allegations, and we now have evidence showing that allegation was true perhaps at the time but is no longer true on the payment. Everybody's stipulating that it's been paid.
For the 26th?
For the 26th.
For the 26th?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
Even Mr. Tom's Backo has stipulated it's been paid?
Well, we're going to ask him when he gets up there.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, do you have any objection or any other comments with respect to admitting PSC Exhibits 4 or 5 into the record?
No, that's fine. Appreciate that.
Okay. Mr. Thompson has objected to admission of both of the exhibits. You know, I did question the relevance of the exhibits with respect to, you know, whether or not they relate at all to the alleged violation on the 26th. I guess, you know, they would be potentially relevant with respect to imposing a fine and those things. I will allow exhibits, PSC exhibits 4 and 5 into the record, and the commission has the ability to give them the appropriate weight. So both of the exhibits are admitted, and Mr. Norell, you can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Ronis, I'd like to draw your direction to what's been marked as PSC Exhibit 4. The last two pages of that. Would you please describe for the commission what this is?
These are the letters that we send out when we have lines that have been hit, stating the code and referencing the location and the date of the damage. And on the last page, we mark why we are sending this along with our bill.
And MDU sends these out in lieu of filing a third-party complaint with the PSC, is that correct?
Yes.
So if there were 74 violations in the Minot area, 74 lines hit, an alternative to sending out this letter to 74 different people would be filing 74 complaints with the Public Service Commission for one-call violations?
If we deem that the contractor was responsible for the damage and why they were responsible for the damage, then these letters go out. If they are not responsible for the damage, same as on July 12th, Tom did not receive a letter of this.
Thank you. I have one more question. You had stated in your testimony that the excavator typically calls the strike in when the line is hit. Did Tom's call this strike in, the 26th?
I believe you did. Yep, I believe he did.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Thompson, follow-up questions?
Do you remember, after your guy come out and took care of the leak, if he returned and cut out the other four splices that were in from the previous GATS hit?
No. I know of one other time that line was hit going to that motel. And from what I recall, that was repaired when that was done, when it was hit. I do not know of two times. I know of one time.
Okay, no further questions.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
When you said I know of one time, is that your recollection, or are you saying there was only one other time for that line?
I know of one time.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk.
Yes, Your Honor. I know that our attorney, General Catalana, has advised me we've all stipulated to the fact that it's been paid, but we've probably got at least a couple hours left in this hearing. Would there be a way that you could have an audit, get something here today that shows that the damages have been paid for the July 26th incident? Like, I would really like to have that in our record today, and if not today, in a late-filed exhibit.
Let me do some checking on that for us, but I can probably get that emailed to us or something.
Okay, thank you. That's okay. No further questions, Your Honor.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Got it. Oh.
What were the circumstances of the one time that you know of when this line was hit?
CTI was boring in.
That's an excavating company?
Yep. Central Trenching was boring in a communications cable to the motel.
And that and this line that got damaged, does that go to the motel that was being built, or does
yes.
that go to a different motel that was already there?
No, I believe it was all the same service line. It was the same service line. This was at different times.
So when this happened, is that motel already operational, or is it just being?
It was being built.
I was thinking of being built. So was there any gas to leak here, or was this just a line that was not even in service yet?
No, it was an active gas line. There, I do not recall if the meter was set. The meter was not probably set at that time, but it was an act. It did have gas in the gas line.
So it was fairly far along under construction.
Yes.
Okay. I have nothing else.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak, any further questions?
No further questions for me. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson? Okay.
No questions.
All right. Ms. Ronis, you may be excused, and Mr. Norell, you can call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call Aaron Mormon, the Gas Pipeline Safety Program Manager for the state of North Dakota.
Mr. Mormon, you've heard me advise the previous witnesses of the penalty for perjury, and being so advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, Mr. Norell, proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Mormon, would you please describe what your position is with the PSC?
I'm the natural gas, North Dakota Natural Gas Interstate Pipeline Program Manager, Safety Program Manager.
And what are your duties in that position?
We regulate intrastate gas pipelines and facilities within the state of North Dakota, also investigate damage prevention cases.
And how many damage prevention cases would you say you've worked on?
17 to date.
All right. How long have you been involved with pipeline safety matters?
I started with... as the program manager, August 1st of 2012.
Part 5 of the complaint states that there was a staff investigation. Did you conduct this investigation?
Yes.
Was it Mr. Fahn who directed you to conduct the investigation?
Yes, it was.
As part of the investigation, Mr. Fahn said there's typically a letter sent to the excavator notifying them of the violation, and they have an opportunity to respond. Did you send Mr. Thompson from Tom's Backhoe a copy of the third-party complaint?
Yes, I did.
And did you receive a response from him?
Yes, we did receive a response.
Your Honor, I'm marking, and I would like to hand out the response from Tom's Backhoe to the commission as PSC Exhibit 6, so we can all see that.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Mormon, is this a copy of the letter that you received from Tom's in response to the letter?
Yes, it is.
Your Honor, I would move this as admission into evidence as PSC Exhibit 6.
Any objection, Mr. Thompson? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit number 6 is admitted into evidence.
Thank you. I think Commissioner Fedorchak had asked this question earlier, but in this response it states that the line was potholed. Could you describe what that means again?
Right. And as was previously discussed, excavators will normally pothole or make an inspection type hole where they find out the exact location of the facility before they dig. And this will tell them how close they are or if they're right on top of it, that it's an exact location of the facility.
And there's been some questions as to crossing the line versus 11 times, potholing once. Where, I believe it was determined that you were the genesis of that opinion. Where would you have gotten that opinion from?
I think after hearing what some people have said up here before me, it'll clarify this a little bit. In the response, it had said that I crossed this Tom's response was, I crossed this utility 11 times in the last 1,500 feet and maintained a 4-foot depth. And I think that's where that is coming into. but after listening to what Don said, it could have been over a longer stretch and not right exactly in that area. But it was taken from the response saying that it was crossed 11 times in that 1,500 feet.
What's your opinion on the there's been discrepancies as well, discussion regarding the variation in depth. Do you think that is it uncommon in your experience that a line would vary that much in depth?
Well, it can depend. Probably more normal you would see a more uniform depth, but there are times where if it's due to grading issues, landscape issues, after a line has been put in, it could happen that there may have been an area that was cut away, some part above the pipeline, which would make it less deep or more shallow in that area. It could happen.
Would a prudent and careful excavator be able to determine those variations in depth?
Not without locating the line, physically locating the line. It would be an educated guess at best, because you'd be taking a chance. You would not know the exact location.
And how would a person physically locate the line? Through potholing?
Right. And there are different ways to do that. I mean, you can dig down, hand dig. You can do a hydrovac, however it is expose the line without damage to the line.
Would you describe the rest of your investigation that took place on this matter?
Well, what we do is we send out the third-party complaint, and then the excavator has a chance to respond, which he did. And then at that point, we determine, and we've had some interviews with both MDU and Tom Spackle, and compiled that and put it together. And then by using the North Dakota One Call Law, referring to that and to what we've gathered as information, we'll make a determination as to whether or not there will be a civil penalty or however, whatever direction the commission decides to go on that.
Just a second here. Your Honor and Commissioner Fedorchuk, I'm just, since you're not in the room, just to let you know, I'd like to move for admission into evidence Mr. Mormon's interview notes, but I need to mark those right now. I apologize for the time in marking. I wasn't sure which exhibits we would be using once we got beyond a certain number.
Okay.
Your Honor, I've handed out three documents stapled together with the label PSC Exhibit 7 on there, and I would like to have Mr. Mormon just briefly explain what this is before moving it, offering it for admission. Mr. Mormon, could you please describe what these three documents are?
Okay. The first one, labeled I-1, is Interview 1 with Tom's Backhoe Service. After I received the third-party complaint, I called him to visit with him about the situation, and that's what is referred to in the first interview. I think it was an I-1. And I-2, I called and had an interview with Don Ronis from MDU. And these, by the way, were both on the same date, February 4th, 2014. And got the side or the information that they had on the event. And then I had... After doing that, I made one more call back with Tom's Backhoe to inform him that what we were looking at doing after doing investigation, and that was the $500 civil penalty proposed, but also to inform him that he had a right to a hearing at this point. So that's what the third interview is about.
Your Honor, I would move admission of these interview notes into evidence.
Mr. Thompson, do you have an objection to Exhibit 7? Ms. Jeff Kotsako?
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit number 7 will be admitted. You can continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Mormon, is there any issues that arose in these interviews, anything that you... I guess just describe briefly these interviews, these three interviews for the commission, how they went.
Well, I think in my first interview, basically what I gathered from that was that Thomas Backhoe was very upset about the depth of the line, what found the depth of the line to be. That was probably the biggest issue I had with that. And asking if there was any kind of... regulations on that, which of course there are, but in a case like this with the damage, what I had said was that there's no place in the North Dakota One Call Law that states the minimum depth requirement for the lines. He was upset, I could tell that, but and in the second interview with Dawn, she had informed me that she had been on the scene and to take a look at it. She had talked to their first responder, and as she had stated earlier, that he had gotten off and taped off the line, part of the damaged line, and that MDU had squeezed off the line too. So their tech was there to do that. And in the third interview, I just did a call, like I said, to follow up with Tom to let him know what we had determined, way we wanted to move forward on this with the civil penalty, and also gave him the right to request a hearing.
Do you believe in this matter the depth of the line is an issue, or was there a violation of the one call law regardless?
There is a violation of the one call law. Simply because at the point where the line was hit and damaged, it was not physically located. The exact location was not physically located.
Right now, Mr. Fahn is photocopying something I would like to offer for admission as PSC Exhibit 8, but I just want to set up the foundation for that. Mr. Mormon, did you receive any information from MDU that the damages have been paid by Mr. Thompson in this matter?
Yes.
And how was that received?
That was received by email from Mike Shep.
Okay, thank you.
And I do not recall the date on that email, but I had called when we were working on this case. I had called to see if the damages had been paid, and by his email they had been.
And Your Honor, I've just been handed that email from Mr. Shep to Mr. Mormon, and I would like to offer that into evidence as PSC Exhibit 8.
I'll go ahead and hand it out and let us take a look. And
basically what Mike had sent me was just a statement that it had been paid with, you know, no kind of a receipt or anything, but just a statement.
Mr. Mormon, I believe you're looking at that email. Would that be the email that we're referencing?
That is.
Mr. Thompson, do you have any objection to admitting the email into evidence?
No objection, Chair.
Okay. Ms. Jeff Kotsako, any objection?
No objection.
PSC Exhibit Number 8 is admitted. Mr. Norell, go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe I have any further questions for Mr. Mormon at this point.
Okay. Mr. Thompson, you can go ahead and ask him any questions.
So according to the law, to go for one call has nothing to do, has no jurisdiction with depth of a gas line that was newly put in the last year. Do you know who would have the jurisdiction for policing that?
That would be through the state regulatory group, which would be us, but nothing with the North Dakota One Call Law. It doesn't have anything as far as minimum depths in the North Dakota One Call Law.
Okay. No more questions.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have one or two. Based on looking at the exhibit that's the interview notes, a quick read of that, and I haven't had time to read it thoroughly, but it looks to me like your conversations were inquiring about the potential for a consent order where the excavator basically agrees with the factual situation. Is that a correct read, or were you following up in these interviews to further assist your investigation of whether a violation had occurred to begin with?
The first interview was to get information from Thomas Backhoe on his take of the event. And then, of course, then when I followed up with him on interview three, that would have been after looking at the relevant information that we had, or the information we deemed to be relevant in this case, deciding on what direction to go with it, and informing him of the consent order, where he would sign a consent order and agree with the damages that had been done, and with the $500 civil penalty, or the right to request a hearing if he so disagreed.
So are we missing a page then? Because the first line of the first page of Exhibit 7 is that you called him about sending him a consent order and kind of explaining it to him. Am I missing a page of an interview, of a discussion?
No.
I'm just wondering if when I read that, I think the staff investigation is pretty well done at that point if you are talking about the consent order. Is that correct?
Well, this was all, yes, it was all put together. But what I had done here was to, we're looking at putting together a consent order, but I wanted to get his take on this before the consent order. At that time, the consent order would not have been done yet.
Right.
But just informing him of what the options would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Aaron, for your testimony and your work on this case and other cases. Just to put a little finer point on some of the things that you brought out, in your opinion, was there any question on either parties about whether there was a valid locate?
No.
So everybody's in agreement there was a valid locate.
Right.
And your understanding of the North Dakota One Call Law is once you have a valid locate, it is the responsibility of the excavator to make sure they have physically located the infrastructure without some type of mechanical equipment?
Yes.
And that's as cut and dried as it comes, in your opinion, is what I heard.
In my opinion, yes, it is.
So is there ever a time when someone should be using or is authorized to use mechanical equipment in that zone that they should be physically locating? Is there ever a time where that's acceptable?
Nope. Physically locating it could be by hand digging or, as I said earlier, by hydrovacking, which would be a form of equipment, but that's not like the cutting edge. You don't have a cutting edge, you know. So it's basically you delicately dig around it until you find the exact location of the facility.
There has been a lot of discussion about depth, but you also said that if MDU has not properly installed something, that would be a separate jurisdictional hearing.
Yes.
Fair enough. And then how much experience do you have overall in pipelines? I know that you testified how much time you have in the commission, but how much experience do you have in pipelines? How much total experience?
It's about 20 years.
So it's not total. Like you just got started doing this a couple of years ago.
Right.
So in your previous experience, were you the person doing the pipeline installation?
Basically, I worked as for a one large interstate pipeline project that went through North Dakota. I worked as the landowner liaison So anytime there was an issue or a problem along the pipeline during the construction or restoration of the pipeline, I would be called in by the stakeholders or the landowners to gather information.
So you've had an understanding of pipeline law for many, many years.
Yes, and I worked with two of the large transmission companies, interstate transmission companies, and gasification company in North Dakota.
And then, thank you. And the last question that I have is the when staff makes the recommendation on what they feel the fine should be for the alleged violation, your range is, as Mr. Fawn testified in this case, $0 to $5,000. In future cases, it's $0 to $25,000 because the law changed. How did you come to a $500 fine? Why not $5,000? Why not zero? How do you come to $500?
Well, this has been it was come up with in the past. It was a recommendation based on past precedents, like a first-time violation of the one-call law, or whatever it is, damage. Okay, if there's no locate, it would be, okay, here's your starting point if there's no locate. So if someone is digging without a locate and someone stops them, I mean, that is a violation. You're digging without a locate. But if there is a damage on top of it, then, you know, that's another step up. It's just kind of a graduated step. And the $500 is one that has been set in the past. It has been a precedent, has been used. And I know there's new limits now from the $0 to $5,000, it goes to $0 to $25,000. As of August 1st of 2013.
Would you consider this almost the minimum fine that you would levy on someone?
Yes.
Given the fact that there was a locate done, it was, in your opinion, improperly located inside it?
Just damage, right, yeah.
In another scenario is if you have a company that you're working with, they come back in front of you for the third or fourth time in front of the commission, would that change your assessment of what you may recommend a fine to be?
Well, as staff, we would reevaluate that situation, and if it came to a point where it doesn't look like the party, the responsible party, is being responsible, then we would look at maybe a step up in those graduation of civil penalties.
Would you ever think it appropriate that you, as we have done in other gas cases, not dealing with call before you dig, where you levy a very significant fine? But you suspend part of it based on good faith going forward and no future incidents. I'd be curious to know what your thoughts on that might be.
I would guess that it would be a possibility or a consideration if that particular party showed us that they were making steps to correct any deficiencies, probably in their work activities. If we could see that there were some steps being made to correct what we see as maybe a pattern.
Okay, and then do you have any idea why someone would pay for damages and then come and say that they're not responsible?
No, I don't. I would think that it seems to me that they're admitting that, yes, they did do the damage.
All right, thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Explain to me, like, to use the Exhibit 6 information from Tom's backhoe, he said he crossed this 11 times in 1,500 feet. So when this was marked, if I had gone out there right after it was marked by one call, would I have seen a 1,500-foot solid continuous painted line or flags or intermediate spots painted, or what would I have seen?
There are different ways of doing it. Flags is a normal way to do it. It can be white lined, where that's like painted, you know, the whole stretch would be painted. But it would say on the one call ticket what area, when they call in a one call locate request, they would ask to have a certain area located, like an area that they're working. If they're working in a 1/4 mile corridor, you know, 200 feet wide, they would request something like that between a certain block and another block and down to a certain avenue. They would specify in their locate request what areas they would want located. And then in most cases, you will see flags.
And how far would they be apart?
It varies, but the ones that I have seen are anywhere from probably 20 to 50 feet, sometimes closer, depending on the area.
Okay. So let's say you have two flags that are 20 feet apart, and I want to dig close to that, but I want to miss that. Is if I just run a string from one flag to the other and measure a foot away from it, was it a foot or 2 feet?
2 feet.
2 feet away from it. As long as I'm outside of that 2 feet line, I can go ahead and dig and shouldn't have anything to worry about?
That's how I read it in the North Dakota One Call Law. It doesn't mean, I mean, there could be very circumstances where, for an example, if a line had been put in or there was a wide ditch and a line was put in, and when it was backfilled, maybe the line was pushed over. You know, it might be outside of that 2 foot mark, but that would be very rare. It could happen. But that 2 foot buffer zone on either side is a safety buffer zone because, well, that's what it's set at, and you should be within, anybody installing that should be within that. So, but you don't take, mark it here and then go, 200 feet away and assume it's going to be a straight line there because you can't assume that. You don't know.
But the flags that you're given to work with, then you should be able to assume it would be within 2 feet of a straight line between them.
Right.
Because you would assume the company that put the facility in had some consistency there and wasn't jutting back and forth.
Yes.
Okay. And then the earlier in that same paragraph, it says it was on the west side of the road, it was 12 inches deep, and 6 feet to the east of this, it was 36 inches deep where he potholed. Does that seem normal to you that in the course of 6 feet that there'd be a depth change from 36 inches to 12 inches?
I wouldn't say it's normal. I would say that in the event that some grading or landscaping or any kind of excavation from the time the line had been installed to the time that this was discovered, unless you have some kind of a record of excavation that had been done in that area or any kind of movement of dirt or soil had been done in that area where the grade had been changed, that's probably the only way you would know. But there, it could be. I'm not saying that's not a normal situation.
And what did you see in this site? Was there like a road or a dike or something built there that would have caused a bunch of dirt to be brought in to have, in the first place, caused that to be 3 feet deep?
Okay, I was not on site on this one. Basically, I'm going by the description and by what the picture showed on that.
Okay. I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any questions for Mr. Moorman?
Just one question, Aaron, and this is relating to your pipeline, your safety experience and expertise. Why do we emphasize this one call program so much and the importance of protecting this underground infrastructure? What kind of potential does it have to do damage? How big of a problem is third-party strikes to the overall safe operation of our underground infrastructure?
Oh, it can have tremendous effects. You could have lice. First of all, you have the escape gas, okay? Well, that's not good, but that could be a minor problem. But you also could have injuries and loss of life. We don't know, and there's also the issue of static electricity, around these plastic lines too. So it is a very serious issue.
Is there any data to suggest how big of a risk these third-party strikes are to the underground infrastructure and to leaks and problems that you see in pipelines and gas lines, et cetera? Is it the most common, the third most common cause? What? Tell me what you know about third-party damage as it relates to damaged underground infrastructure.
It is one of the, I don't have the, I know I've seen a list of it, but it's one of the top three, I believe, as far as damages to pipelines is third-party damage. In some cases, it's more. It depends on where you're at. Some states, it's the top numbers will turn around a little bit, but normally there are a couple of causes that are the highest rate of incidents, and third-party damage is one of them.
Do we have any data in North Dakota?
You know, I think I can look for some, but I don't have any at my fingertips, Julie.
Okay. Those are all my questions for you, Aaron. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Norell, any follow-up?
Yes, Your Honor, just a question. Mr. Mormon, the letter states, and there was discussion with the commissioners about potholing the line depth at 36 inches versus hitting it at 12 inches, I apologize. Would it be reasonable, prudent, and careful excavation to would a prudent and careful excavator know that that line is 12 inches? How would they find out that that was 12 inches even though they had potholed at 36 inches?
You would have to pothole the exact area you're going through.
So do you believe then that where the line was hit, was there a pothole at that location?
I do not believe so.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Thompson?
I am not sure, and I'm kind of going to ask this question about locates and inroads. And I'm going to just do this from experience here of me running a road grader and shaping a road. I'm going to make a statement here, and I'd like your opinion here, I guess, for this. Mm-hmm. I bladed more than one road before where I've been down 12 inches trying to crown it and fix it in the class 5. And like in this case, if I'd have did that, I'd have cut the gas line right off. Who would be responsible then?
When you are grading this road, do you have a one call locate in place?
It is not required.
To go 12 inches?
For blading a road.
Question and answer.
Because I'm still in the class 5 part. I'm not in the subgrade part. And the rules say they are supposed to be deeper.
Is there a question for Mr. Mormon?
Well, it's a statement about that this was in the class 5. And that's why I'm asking if there's any teeth that might, if you cut it like that.
So if we're looking at this particular point on this picture, okay, if you're saying it's in the class 5, when I look at the picture, it looks to me like we're in the soil.
It was in the road.
Okay. I guess I'm having trouble answering that one because I see it, you know, if the picture is accurate, it shows the picture that it's in the soil, it's in the dirt, and it's not actually, it looks like if it's part of anything, it would be the road bed, but not the class 5 part of it.
I can explain it here when I get up there.
Okay.
A little bit more.
Okay.
That's fine. Do you have any other questions, though? Okay. Ms. Jeff Kotsacko?
I appreciate the expertise and experience of the people that have testified, but does advocacy staff have a reference to any published authority or anything on the proper way to be locating these within the 2-foot zone? Does it have to be potholed every 5 inches or whatever a pothole takes to make? Is there an authority that we can look to for guidance that staff may know about?
I would have to check the one call law closer to see if there's any place that pinpoints that or narrows it down a little bit closer. I think I know what you're asking.
And I wasn't thinking of the law because we all have that and we can all look at that, but I thought right. The publication, standard in the industry nationally, something from the feds who want us to have a one-call law, something like that. Is that available?
I would have to check and see. I am not 100% sure on that, but I will check into that.
Okay, and so perhaps it, staff could respond, and that whatever the response is could be the late-filed exhibit, you know, if they find anything, or they could submit it. If they don't, they can respond and say they haven't.
Alana, can you further clarify what it is you're asking for?
Well, this witness and several others have talked about the proper thing to be doing, and you just spoke about it should have been potholed right at this location, and you would have found out that it was only 12 inches. And I am looking for guidance from training, from federal interpretations, some additional guidance in addition to the people that have testified and their expertise.
Well, you're talking about something, if we can show the one, if they can show the one call handbook, that, because I'll ask some follow-up questions.
Proper procedure, okay. Yes. Is it recommended that you pothole, I mean, because I don't know exactly what a pothole is, but I'm envisioning that you'd have to be doing it all along the line within that 2 feet. And is that every inch? Is it every foot? Is it? I just don't understand what this recommended standard is. Okay. And I would, if there is such a thing, I'd like to know what it is.
Okay.
Commissioner Kalk, any questions?
I do actually. To, and I'm not trying to cross-cut my attorney's correct question because I think it's a very good one. But the I want to ask Mr. Mormon a question. My understanding of my work with North Dakota One Call is that once you have a valid locate, when you talk about the 24-inch zone, it is absolutely the responsibility of the person doing the excavating to make sure they physically locate the infrastructure. Now, how they do that is given deference to each individual one, but they are just very broad that it's the responsibility of the contractor to physically locate. How they do that, potholing, spoons, it doesn't matter, but it's their responsibility. That's the way I understand the what is taught to – I was just at that banquet last night when the Chad's Ryan Schmaltz from One Call talked to the excavators, and the excavators also chimed in. I believe there's an understanding that it is the responsibility of the excavator to make sure they physically locate anything that is properly located before they transit it, and how they do it is up to them. That's the way I understand it. I'd just be curious to your thoughts back to that dialogue.
Yeah, and so much of this falls back to doing it in a careful and prudent manner. You know, if they can do that carefully without damaging the facility, there are probably a couple of different ways to do that. You know, the ones I've seen pretty common are the digging with a shovel or hydrovacking. Hydrovacking, and in some types of soil, hydrovacking works well. If it's like, you know, a gravelly, rocky type soil, you know, where it's hard to dig, maybe hydrovacking works better for that.
But to my understanding, I've never seen anything in any of the states that say you have to do this every inch or 2 inches or three
right.
inches.
Exactly.
So that's where I'm just trying to clarify what the council's asking for, because I think and we'll just wait and see what the advocacy staff comes back with, but I wanted to get on the record what I believe the understanding is from my interpretation of the North Dakota One Call. Thank you.
Yep.
Your Honor, could I follow up just
Go
by
ahead.
Way of explanation? I agree. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying and understand that that's the position. My question would be the next question. If it is the excavator's responsibility, I'm not saying whether it is or isn't, but if it is, is there a guidance document for excavators somewhere out there when you go to learn to be an excavator?
One Call handbook or something.
Yes, or standard recommended procedures. What do those say? I just think it would be helpful because the question is whether there's negligence, whether there was a lack of care. We're trying to get to what that means. Thanks.
Commissioner Chrisman?
No more questions.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No questions.
Okay, anything further, Mr. Nuro? Mr. Toe, okay. Mr. Mormon, you may be excused. Do you have any other witnesses at this time?
No, Your Honor. The advocacy staff would rest its case at this point.
Okay. At this point, I think we'll take a short break, about 10 minutes.
Judge?
And
Judge?
Yes, Commissioner.
Julie. I regret that I have a commitment at 11:30, and so I'd offer two things. One, would it be possible to break for lunch and have Mr. Thompson at 1, and if not, then I express my apologies to Mr. Thompson and
pledge to him that I will listen to his entire testimony and case on our recording and take all of his comments and information to full consideration.
Mr. Thompson, do you have the ability to break until 1 p.m., or would...
I was supposed to be in a meeting at 1:30, and why not?
Okay.
I think we could take a break, Your Honor, and then come back if that's the case. Yeah, the deference of the...
Be best for me if you could.
That's fine. We can take a 10-minute break and then proceed. And as Commissioner Fedorchuk indicated, she's got the ability to listen to the recording of your testimony at that point, so, and she can do that. So, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think we're just going to take a 10-minute break and then go ahead and proceed. Mr. Thompson won't be available after lunch. So,
okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.